People in this part of the world speak in these kind of cavalier ways about, well, we went to Kennebunk or we went to the Cape. Everybody's supposed to know where those places are. Well, Paul has said to everybody, I'm going to Troas. And everybody back then knew what that meant. It was like saying, oh, we're going to the Cape, or we're going to Wellfleet, or we're going to P-Town. Right. So he was hanging out in Troas on the case of what you and I would call Western Turkey. And he had a little bit too much pizza one night and had a dream, a bad dream. Because a nameless guy from Macedonia, we never know his name, he's just some Greek guy, comes to him in the dream and says, Paul, we need help down here. Would you please come and preach the gospel? Now, the Acts of the Apostles does not record what Paul said. It does record what he did, which, of course, in most cases, is an awful lot more important. He went. So how do you get from your cottage on the coast of Turkey in Asia Minor to Greece? Well, the Acts of the Apostles said he sailed from Troas. He probably did so on somebody's boat that he hired. Today, there is no transportation, and if you're a modern missionary without any money or a camel or a car or a motorcycle or even a bicycle, you would have to walk. And you would walk from Troas to Avialik. And from there, you would take the Mytilene ferry, where if you were a lady missionary, she would change to another ferry for Lesbos. Don't ask me. And having begged enough to pay her next fare, she would take the ferry to Samothrace. All of this would take over 42 hours, most of which was walking, and 300 miles. From Samothrace, another ferry would take her to Kavala. And from there, she would walk to Neapolis, an additional 50 hours and 167 miles. That's Google, not me. I don't figure this stuff out. And I don't know, that part of the world is dry. Yeah, it's got olive trees, but it's got a lot of dust. And there are some really very significant mountains, some of which are over 14,000 feet in the area. I presume you walk around those, not over them. I didn't make the map big to look to see where the place went because we're not taking the walking route, which would have taken about 6 months and would go up. Oh, my aching feet. I don't know about any of you, but just the other day, I had a travel difficulty. I got a call from Amtrak telling me that the trains from Boston to Albany aren't running because of track repairs, and we would have to take the bus. I thought that was a hardship. These days, of course, we would use modern Aegean and Mediterranean ferries, not antique sailing boats. And even if we walked, there would be some sidewalks, some, or perhaps a paved path, and certainly hitchhiking opportunities. The Google hiking map shows where we would stay overnight during the three-month trip. Paul, of course, had to beg for accommodations along the way, hoping for generous hostesses such as he found in Lydia, the purple cloth seller from Thyatira. Even the most enthusiastic contemporary Christian, for instance, somebody who's going to South Dakota this summer, might ask, why? The answer would appear to be, or at least one answer, is in John 14, where there are, of course, more than one answer to a number of things, where Jesus says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid. Jesus says crazy stuff like that. He goes on to say it's worse. He says, You heard me say to you, I'm going away and I'm coming to you. That's what's called a mixed message. Which is it? Is he coming or is he going? Is he going to stay? And if he stays, is he going to eat? If he's going to eat, is he going to stay overnight? Do we have to do his laundry? Is he leaving soon? Is he going to the Father and expects us to be glad of it? He implies that if we're not glad he's going to the Father, we probably don't love him very much. Wow! We've heard that kind of emotional blackmail before.
If you love me, you would love me.
Oh, you did it too, huh? Christians are called to do all manner of things. And I know you people know what they are. You really don't need me to tell you what they are. All I can ever do is kind of underline the big ones. Because you've heard them all 1,000 times. And you certainly have heard from people who aren't God telling you you ought to do things to prove that you love God as if they were God and you should do what they say. Before we can distinguish what we're going to love and who we're going to love and how we're going to love, it's probably important for us to know and listen to Jesus' first piece of advice about not being afraid. It's important for us to look and find out what it is that scares us, what our fears are. Because Jesus tells us more than once not to be afraid. So there must have been a reason. These things don't get said in some kind of vacuum. One of the reasons we know the scriptures are inspired is so we keep having the kinds of experiences that happen there over and over and over again. And the reason they wrote them down is because the people who wrote them down had those experiences over and over again too. And Jesus knows that we're afraid of all kinds of things. And most of us are grateful that the worst thing that happens to us is we have to take the bus. Because very few of us are asked to take roads as long, confusing, expensive, and just plain weird as Paul's apostolic trips. And he took more than one. The one that I described to you this morning was only the second one. And shorter. But regardless of that, we still do suffer, and we still are afraid. When Debbie and I went to the Caribbean the first time, we were silly enough to do it twice. When we went to the Caribbean the first time in 1992, we told our friends and neighbors that we were missionaries. It sounded good, but we knew it wasn't true. What we knew is that I was simply a supply priest in an established congregation with 3 churches, which knew a lot more about being the church in the Caribbean than I did. We did not have to beg a place to live, but had the use of a bungalow with 2 bedrooms. Oh, actually, they're called Charming Caribbean Cottages. That's what it says on the postcard. So we had the use of a bungalow with 2 bedrooms, a bath with occasional water, a phone that only worked once, and sporadic electricity. The irony was, if you went down to the phone company where they had a bank of pay phones, they all worked, but the only number they called was the casino 2 blocks away. We did wonder what we had gotten ourselves into, especially the first night we were there. It was hotter than the hinges of hell in the first week in July. And the people next door had just gotten a new puppy whom they had chained with Banquo's chains to a tree. And it went clank, clank, clank all night long, along with the chickens. Of course, the roosters get up at sunlight. So we did wonder what we'd gotten ourselves into. And we were, I suspect, legitimately afraid. Not as afraid as the night when the guy broke in trying to steal our wallets. But we decided not to be afraid. After all, we were only there for 6 weeks, 23 hours, and 6 minutes. But we felt more like missionaries on our very last Sunday when, as people greeted us going out the door, 300 different people said, "Have a safe flight, Father." It made me wonder if they knew something about American Airlines that I didn't. Now, I'm a self-appointed missionary for the life we live at Reed's Landing. And every once in a while, people ask me if I get paid for running my sales spiel, which I mostly don't. I actually get a card once a year that entitles me to some free hamburgers. But other than that, I do it because I think we have the kind of life that anybody could enjoy living. And my missionary goal is to let other people know about what a wonderful place it is and how convenient it is to live at Loomis Lakeside at Reed's Landing. So people, they nod, they listen politely, they go like this. And then they say, well, how do you know when it's time to make the move? That's like asking somebody, how do you know when you're going to get lucky? I mean, you know, it's the same kind of question. And I have an answer to that, partly because I have a lot of practice, because everybody asks me that question. And I tell them, well, there are two times that you know. The first is do it right now before you lose your nerve. Take Jesus' advice and don't be afraid. And the second one, too late. There's only two times, right now and too late. Still, all of us continue to be called to exercise our wills up against hard, scary things. And we go to strange places with stranger people we know nothing about. And we try to be glad about our comings and goings as Jesus told us to. And we do this because we have been given his peace. You remember that Jesus says in another place, if you do not find the spirit of peace where you are, wipe the dust off your feet and go somewhere else. Not a bad idea. But sometimes there simply is no other place to go. And then, of course, it's up to us to spread the peace that we brought with us. And if we're not bringing peace with us, we are the problem. And you know, Jesus says in another place, I do not bring peace, but a sword. And sometimes it takes something really sharp to cut through to the peace. What the sword cuts through is fear. In every case, we who are the baptized are well equipped for the world in which we have been sent, no matter how scary we think it might be.